Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, Thursday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. This is our panel portion of the program, the Blab Fest, if you will. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. If you would like to blab with us, we would love to have your comments. If they're brief, very, very brief. Our panel today, what a great panel. And we'll start with...
Blab Fest?
What?
Blab Fest?
Well, it can be
reporting you to the president of the company.
It can be a little blabby. Yeah, I think that's true. The best two on the panel today, and we're lucky to have them, is Judy Patrick, executive editor of the... Well, you're just the editor.
Editor.
Who's the executive editor?
There is no executive.
So you're also the de facto executive editor of the Daily Gazette.
I know Mike Spain.
Are you also the managing editor?
No, I have a managing editor.
Oh, that's good.
Right. Yeah. And then there's the executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, Stu Shinsky.
Good morning, kids.
It's nice to have you here on the program. And then there's Alan, who is our own editor-in-chief and just a bon vivant and wonderful human being. And
you have to say that.
Yes, I do. Well, payday's coming, after all. So you guys just got done with the media project taping, and how was that?
Oh, it was good. Rex was out, and, you know, we love Rex, but Judy was in charge. And Judy is usually, you know, she underplays her persona, but she came in there, she had a look on her face, you know, she had a devilish look on her
really?
Face. Yeah.
Maybe she was just appalled at what she saw in Studio D.
So people should listen. This is Sunday afternoon.
Well,
and Monday afternoon, we'll see how I did. It was my first time hosting. It is a bit of a power trip to sit in the Rex Smith chair.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, you thought you were on Saturday Night Live hosting as opposed to the media project.
And so, Stu, you were on the program as well?
I was on the program, and I
as
was
well.
Very much impressed with Judy's command.
Oh, man.
McLaughlin-like command on the panel.
It's the second McLaughlin reference this week. So you guys talked about, I assume, we Trump's new chief.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. That's very interesting. So there's this new, what is it? The Breitbart is a online thing, is it?
Yeah.
Online. And there's a chief guy named Bannon, right?
Yep. Stephen, is it?
Correct.
And Bannon is taking a leave to come over from the news site to run the campaign. Now, there are the Trump campaign, there are many people who think this is a very bad thing because people already suspect that newspapers and other places are in the pockets of one candidate or another.
Interesting.
Yeah. So now you have this. When you say interesting, I'm never quite sure whether you mean that or not. But they move over, and they this revolving door. And I'll tell you one thing about Judy Patrick. She doesn't fool around. She didn't like it at all.
You don't like that, Judy.
No, I think it sends a bad message to people who look to the media for objective reporting. They're saying, oh, yeah, the media's always been in one candidate's pocket or another. We want to be viewed as objective. And in this case, I think it's also it's politically bad for Republicans because I think mainstream Republicans are saying the Trump campaign really has gone ultra-conservative in a way that Breitbart is.
I'm not sure conservative is fair. I think the ultra conservatives are saying this guy is no conservative.
It's true. It's true. It's a Breitbart kind of conservatism.
Right. Yeah, it's my take on it. Certainly, I share Judy's concern about the blurring of the line of objectivity. But I don't think the Breitbart site was objective to begin with.
Okay, but
it had a very definitive platform and where it was coming from on the news and. Frankly, it has long aligned with some of Mr. Trump's beliefs.
But to be fair, the lines have been blurred for quite some time. We have any number of presidential staffers who are now so-called anchors on or pundits on networks,
right.
Clearly still carrying water for their particular parties.
Mm-hmm. So let's remember, though, that the press has never been held in high regard in this country, poll after poll shows.
Certainly not
that.
During this hour.
No, not at all.
Okay.
I mean, That's right. It's a quip, but you know it's bad because what happens is that people you know think that there is as prostitutional as anybody else in this society.
Transactional. Yes.
All it takes is money. You know what I mean? So you get Rupert Murdoch buying the POST and losing money on it in order to get his his word in, maybe to be heard in the White House. And then you got the wonderful Bezos, for better reasons, buying the Washington Post and, you know, doing that. You got a group of people in my hometown of Great Barrington and Pittsfield now, good citizens, wonderful people, who bought a newspaper in order to save it, to bring journalism back to where it once was and get it out of these corporate hands. So a lot of this scenario is changing.
You know, I hate the blurring or the merger of entertainment, media and politics, but now politics. I just can imagine, you know, if Trump gets elected, maybe we'll select his cabinet on an apprentice-like reality
fired.
Show, basically.
Oh, that's interesting. All right,
we'll
the
have
media
to vie for a spot on the cabinet.
Now, bearing in mind that it'll take some extra editing because you screwed up the timer, Judy, when does the media project air?
Sunday night.
Sunday at 6, Monday at 3.
Stuchinsky, well done. Alan had no idea. Good for you.
Yeah. And
you
can hear at any time at WAMC.org.
And I think you can get the podcast, which is very popular.
A podcast, yeah, you can do it as a podcast.
Okay.
That's announced, so you're riding along in your car. If you know how to make the podcasting work on your, you know, on your brand new Prius, then that's good. And if you don't, tough nuggies.
All right. Fair enough.
So, nuggies are never soft. They're always tough.
Right? The whole area is something that needs discussion.
I got to tell you, I'm perplexed by this whole scenario in Rio. Brazilian authorities want to know more about claims by U.S. swimmer Ryan Lochte and three teammates that they were robbed at gunpoint in Rio. Lochte is back in the U.S.
They were allegedly robbed at gunpoint.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Lochte is back, but teammates Jack Conger, Gunnar Bentz were removed from their plane last night so they could talk with local authorities. Brazilian authorities say U.S. swimmer James Fegan is also expected to speak with them today. Can any of you esteemed journalists tell me what the heck is going on?
I don't think anybody knows what's going on. Mr. Lochte claims that he was basically pulled over by ostensibly some police officers. And
no, people who were dressed as police
dressed officers. Ostensibly, and then robbed. And then suddenly, well, the gun was to his head. Well, then, no, it wasn't quite to his head. And then suddenly it was a taxi. And the story has changed a lot. And Mr. Lochte, he may be one heck of a swimmer, but his judgment has been questioned before. And I think there was a reality show that he had once called What Would Ryan Lochte Do?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it was on E Entertainment Television.
So he won, how many, four gold medals or something like that? He has a lot of gold medals.
He can swim, I'll give you that. Storytelling, well.
Yeah,
but
okay.
To what end? Okay. Medal in that? What end?
Okay,
however.
Now that's such a good question because it's a psychiatric question. Now, if one person lies, that's one thing. But if four people lied together, if they did, and I don't know that they did because I know that the Brazilians were really upset. The people from Rio had put all this money into this. These guys go out and they say, you know, we were robbed. And by the way, robbery in Rio is not an unheard of thing.
Well, no, a British Olympian was robbed at gunpoint after coming out of a club the other night.
So they get a bad rep. Then the people from the government come on. What do they say? Well, they had no business being outside the green line around the Olympics. But it's not good. It's not good. For the Brazilians, and they're making that point. And if they have an aha gotcha thing now, and three of them are not being allowed to leave the country.
Well, that was the point that caught me, which is they Ryan Lochte apparently left. He's back in the United States, but his compatriots. They were still there, and the government seized their passports.
Two of them were on the plane, and they said,
right.
"Hey,
and they
you
said,
come here for
you,
a minute?
Why don't you come back to the terminal, please?" I mean, I don't know Brazilian law real well, but is that enough to seize a passport?
You know, there were some questions about the story. So apparently this happened around 4 o'clock in the morning, but they didn't return to the Olympic Village until 6:30 or so. But, you know, there's always explanations. This is a classic case where you really need to wait and see what all... could have been very drunk at 4 o'clock, and then they had this traumatic experience, allegedly, and maybe they just sat around and said, oh, my God, what are we going to do?
Now, there was footage this morning on one of the cable networks that showed security cam footage of them returning to the Olympic, wherever they stayed, the barracks or whatever they call them, and they all seemed fairly in
jovial.
Good moods. Yeah, at 7 o'clock in the morning. So we shall see. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. There was this Green Party town hall last night.
Oh, yeah.
Not too much about it on the AP wire this morning, mind you. But we will talk about it in a moment. We'll take a break. It's the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from the Lake George Association, formed in 1885 to protect Lake George water for New Yorkers. LakeGeorgeAssociation.org/join. Subsidium Technologies, a single point of contact for area enterprises to identify cloud-related technology. SubsidiumTech.com. Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York. DavidsonBrothers.com. And Callahan Sign, for over 30 years, providers of signs and graphics in eastern New York and western Massachusetts, storefront signs and awnings to fleet graphics and large format banners, sales, service, design, and installation. 800-285-SIGN.
Hello again. It's the Roundtable Panel, 9:23 Thursday morning, a beautiful one shaping up here. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We're joined today by Judy Patrick, Stu Shinsky, and Alan Shartok. You can always weigh in at roundtable@wamc.org. On CNN last night, Jill Stein and the Green Party had a town hall. Green Party presidential nominee Jill Stein said she doesn't believe either mainstream candidate is fit for the White House, brushing aside criticism that her bid could help elect Donald Trump. And this is quoting from the CNN piece. She said, "I will have trouble sleeping at night if Donald Trump is elected. I will also have trouble sleeping at night if Hillary Clinton is elected." This was at a Green Party town hall on CNN. The third party candidate blasted the logic that voters should discount her candidacy, and citing her opposition to money and politics, Stein said that her party stood alone on the national scene, totally independent of corporate influence. Did you watch it, Alan?
No, I didn't. I was fast asleep. You know, if you get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you got to go to sleep at 7. You got to go to sleep at 7:30,
happy nappy.
At night. But I did read about it. And, of course, I didn't have to because I, in this very studio, and she was sitting where you are, Ray, and I was sitting really, really close to where Stu Shinsky is now, and we had an hour together, and there's nothing she said last night that is different from anything that, you know, she said to me. We're very proud here at WAMC of having, you know, of interviewing the third-party candidates and have in the
congressional... When's Gary Johnson on?
Well, we asked him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and there so far has been no reaction.
Okay.
So, and Bill Weld, we've interviewed Bill Weld in the past when he was the governor of Massachusetts. He's the vice presidential candidate. The real question to a lot of people is, who's going to pull more? Now, somebody wrote us yesterday and said Jill Stein is actually pulling some Republicans. Hard to believe. But in fact, you know, there'll be a lot of Republicans who are going to vote on that Libertarian line this year.
You know, it's to CNN's credit for doing this, too. They did the Libertarian town hall. It's an hour worth of primetime, which is a very valuable space. I think Stein did a good job of.
I was toggling.
Yeah, I was up, but I was toggling between that and watching, you know, Bolt run around the track very quickly. So, the Olympic coverage going back and forth. But she did a really good job of articulating her very strong positions. She definitely gives people a choice.
You know, the voice is important. I caught a little of it. Did she say anything that we didn't know? I didn't really catch a whole lot of fresh information.
No, but one thing she did say in regard to the email controversy with Clinton, and I'm quoting, Clinton, quote, too big to jail. I thought that was a pretty powerful line right there. I think maybe Trump steals that one.
Right. She's articulating more positions than Trump is at this point. I mean, I know more about what she would do than I do about what Donald Trump would do.
Mm.
Well, email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org.
Reminds me a little of my fight with Ralph Nader, which I believe is available online at wamc.org. You just put in Alan Shartok.
That was a good one. Nader.
Who won that one?
Well, I did, of course, but there was a lot of screaming going on, and he was denying that he could mess up the election. There are those people who make a very cogent argument that he did. That he cost Al Gore the election.
Well, let me ask the panel this question, a personal opinion only. Even if Jill Stein or Gary Johnson doesn't get to the 15% threshold, in your opinions, should they be on the debate in September at Hofstra?
Okay, so Stewie, we'll start with you. What do you think?
I don't think it can hurt. Why not put the voice out there? Because frankly, we've heard so much from Hillary, we've heard so much from Trump. I wouldn't mind hearing a third voice to counter them and maybe bring some new perspectives.
Okay. And Jude?
You know, I initially was going to say no, but now that I think about it, I think you're right, Stu. I think what Trump and Clinton are saying is so repetitive. Maybe this would bring a different dimension to that discussion.
Well, you know, that's the right thing to say.
You know, because you know what?
Right.
Because we're right.
Will it make a difference in the long run? It probably won't.
No, but my feeling is that she's going to get it, that she'll get in the way of Hillary. In this thing. And let's face it, look, we have a democracy. Sure, everybody should have a chance. And that's why WAMC was first to interview Jill Stein for an hour. But she was very grateful, by the way, that we did. However, you know, the dynamic is definitely changed. And I think to Trump's benefit, when you have the third-party candidates on, or the Jill Stein on, because then it's two against one, she will interfere with the way in which this whole thing is perceived.
You say interfere. Now, you're fond of saying that we can't have democracy without information.
Right.
Isn't this a case where we have those two third-party candidates on, we get more information? Isn't that how democracy is supposed to work, sir?
Well, then why don't we have 40 people on? Why don't we have the vegetarians on?
Well, we had 17 during...
Why don't we have, as you would like to say, what's his name, Gus Hall, if he's still alive?
Gus Hall? Is he running again?
Gus Hall. Was Alf Landon.
Yeah, but would your position change if this, as the third candidate, would likely draw votes away from Trump?
It depends on whether the conservatives are on, whether the libertarians are on. I think that the big scuttlebutt now is that she should be on because she may be closer. I don't know if that's true, by the way. And maybe I shouldn't say that because I don't know who's pulling more. I think lot of Republicans are going to go over to the libertarian side.
Gary Johnson's pulling more at this time.
Yeah.
Well, there were 17 candidates on that GOP stage. So
it was a mess.
We can't do three during the presidential race itself?
All right, I disagree with you, Stewie.
I'm not surprised. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. roundtable@wamc.org. It's the roundtable, and we've only just begun. We'll take a break, and then we'll hear some British people talking. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC 9:33 Thursday morning. Ray in for Joe. We're joined on the panel today by editor of the Daily Gazette, Judy Patrick, executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, Stu Shinsky, and WAMC's Alan Shartok. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, and I believe we may have an email or two worthy of our time.
We do. We heard from Sharon, who said instant runoff voting. So much talk about whether or not Jill Stein will take votes away from Hillary. Why isn't there more conversation about instant runoff voting where people can vote their conscience? Because if their first choice doesn't have enough votes to get elected, that vote goes towards the second choice. I certainly hope that the instant runoff voting is part of Bernie's revolution. That's from Sharon. Ain't going to happen, dear friends.
Why?
Because, the people in power are not about to threaten themselves by changing the system. Now, in New York City, we had a system like that in the 30s. I remember it very well. And a bunch of communists got elected because it was proportional representation. So if the top person didn't get it and they added it all up and you got communists elected. Hmm. That was the end of that.
Yeah, I see.
Don't you see?
I see.
Okay. What a great job Ray does.
Boy, I'll tell you,
things
that's true.
Moving and does not allow confusion to reign. Ray and Joe, two of the best radio men in the business.
You see? Let's remember that at Ray's time.
If I could describe in one word, says Jeff, about Ray, it would be balance. Good for you, sir. It's always great to hear you on the round table. Jeff. All right.
Keep them coming.
Oh, yeah. Keep them coming.
This is the best show I've ever heard.
So Teresa says, so Alan has gone from, I voted for Bernie. I voted for Bernie, to I love democracy, but ..
You see?
I'm not pure enough for Teresa.
No, you're not.
No. And
wash and wear a Democratic person.
Okay, so Dean says, let minor party candidates make an opening statement at the debates. They deserve to be heard, but a 5% candidate doesn't deserve 25% of the airtime. Okay.
Hang on, so what theoretical threshold do you have to hit before you're somewhat relevant?
Count.
Yeah.
So it's 15, is that?
It's 15,
the,
I believe, yes.
The debate committee has
arbitrarily set.
Yeah, but if there's three people on a stage, do you each get 33% of the time?
Well,
it's not
going to
be that.
Unless you have some guy who's way behind in the polls who decides this is their opportunity to really yell and scream.
And then there will be some candidates that won't be on the ballot in every state, correct?
I don't know about that. I think Jill may be on all over the place.
I think the Libertarian candidate is also on in all 50. I believe I saw that.
I think we should shut up because we don't know.
All right.
You know what I mean?
When has that stopped us before?
But there should be some threshold. There can't be no threshold.
Okay.
Sure. Otherwise, everybody would be on there. The vegetarians would be on there. You know.
The vegetarian party.
Come dressed as a carrot.
Could be me.
That's great.
With a carrot
That's
hat.
Great. All right. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Anything more before we
move
on?
Yeah, there's a lot more.
So much for Ray controlling the confusion.
Yeah. The red mist is starting to settle in again. I'm fine. Take my medicine.
Jill Stein said that if Gore was in favor of the Iraq invasion, absolutely false. Gore gave a speech at Stanford 1 month prior, which is a full-fledged attack on Bush's war plans. Okay. And then debates with third parties, and that's way too long. Having the national-level presidential debates without the third party is shorting the American population. I'm not voting for Jill Stein, Allen, says VA, but I do believe we need to hear what she has to say. Many of her issues are important. The voters need more than the Democratic Republican mantras. That's exactly why WAMC gave Jill Stein a full hour right here and was among
the— Oh, really?
The very,
I hadn't heard that.
Among the very first to do that. And Dan says, this is a very important time to remember what happened in 2000. Ralph Nader did not do Al Gore's candidacy by siphoning votes. Al Gore did his own candidacy and forget it. Okay. And let's see here. Brucey says, Trump will use any other candidate on stage to dodge and evade getting questioned on his issues and having his lack of knowledge exposed. He'll turn it into a circus, something he's extremely skilled at. Excellent letter, Brucey. Excellent. You want more? No, you're in charge.
I think people are looking forward to the one-on-one Trump-Clinton debates to see. They think that will be a real challenge.
I think it's on a football night, right? Are the Giants playing?
You know what? I don't know offhand.
Okay, if the Giants are playing, I may have to.
But it'll be a rumble in both places.
Set some DVR.
You're
well, Stu Shinsky, you really stepped in it this time, my man.
Oh yeah.
Fire chairman seeks compromise after American flag controversy. This from the Poughkeepsie Journal. Stu, this story is everywhere. You turn on the TV and it's
Pojo.
Yeah, it's Arlington Fire Department, right?
Well, your source for all of it is PoughkeepsieJournal.com, yeah, I should
exactly.
tell you.
You may be seeing it everywhere, but they're just stealing it.
Pojo.
This is a very compelling story. The short version is this. The Arlington Fire Department, located in Poughkeepsie along the Hudson River, some of the firefighters put flags on three fire trucks.
Right.
The fire commissioners said, hey, you can't do that. Take them off. And then it blew up. It became a story of, well, we're restricting where Old Glory can fly, and how can you do that, and you're not patriotic. And this went around the world. We know there were stories in London. We've seen referrals to our website from European, Australian sites. Today, there's a meeting, and apparently there's going to be a potential compromise coming out today.
Can I just say that when you read the story, you say, well, how could they be so unpatriotic? The flags are enormous.
The flags
are
big.
They're coming off the back of the truck. A compromise might be, all right, we'll put a small flag.
That may well be part of the equation.
Good heavens, they're enormous.
Yes,
You can't get ahead by attacking the American flag or being perceived to attack the American flag, can you?
Well, that's just it. You know, is this story about an unauthorized action?
Yeah.
Is this story about the flag has no place on a truck, or is this story about patriotism is everywhere, why can't we fly Old Glory?
No, but your point is very well taken, because really, if you dig into this correctly, the real fight is that the fire commissioner said we had to approve that, and we didn't do that.
Exactly right. And that's the crux of the beginning of the story.
But aren't there also standards about what you can do with a flag? And when I heard that it was really big, I'm thinking, well, maybe the flag is dragging on the street.
No, it's not rippling from the back of the truck. And as Ray noted, I've seen these flags.
Want to drive behind it and have a flag waving in front of my
windshield. The commissioner said it may well be a liability issue. Maybe it's a distraction for other drivers. And they are sizable flags, and I can sort of see the point. But it's started with, hey, you can't put those on those trucks.
Right.
Now, I noticed last week when I happened to be in New York, perchance, I saw fire trucks going by on Amsterdam Avenue, mm-hmm. And there were they didn't have flags on them. For the first time, I remember that. Mm-hmm. I wonder if this has gone viral.
I mean, a flag decal gets it done, right?
A decal gets it done. A smaller flag might get it done. We checked other departments in the Dutchess County, Hudson Valley area, and we found of the departments we were able to get in contact with, about an even split. Some have flags on the trucks. Some don't.
That big? Are the flags that big on the other fire district trucks?
We didn't do a size comparison, but I can tell you from an observational viewpoint from behind the wheel as I drive around, these are big flags.
Yeah. So, Judy, can we work this into a story in Schenectady, maybe get a fire department to put a 400-foot flag
because,
on the back?
You know, it's not something that you see it during parades when they
right.
put the fire trucks in a parade.
When it's a celebratory thing, yes.
But this is apparently 24/7. These flags are on
the flags would be on the truck all the time.
Does it interfere with their ability to reach the hoses and fight the fires?
They did not.
Hoses are generally on the side. These are on the back of the truck.
But I don't remember my Boy Scout days where we got great instruction about how the flag was to be treated.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, during that time.
Sure.
So, well, you weren't a Boy Scout, were you?
No, but I'm of the belief that you bring the flag in when it rains, and you
exactly.
don't leave the flag out at night unless you have a light on it.
And light on. I've always flown an American flag in front
right.
of our house.
It's always supposed yes. to be
you
illuminated.
You have a flag tie on, by the way, right?
Oh, yeah, he does.
It's a beautiful flag.
Did that come off of a fire truck?
I did because I knew
from
that
the Gus Hall collection, oddly enough.
Okay.
You know, other departments, we one of the other departments, the Eusenville Fire Department, said, hey, if you're not going to fly that flag on your truck, we'll fly it on ours. And there was actually a ceremony that said,
cheap shot.
We'll take your flag. And there was a ceremony to remove it from the Arlington fire trucks and put it on the other trucks.
Well, either way, it's not bad for business over at the Poughkeepsie Journal, right?
Or at the flag company.
It has resulted in some monumental visitation to our website.
Really?
There has been international attention on this. And,
I think Drudge had the link on there.
Drudge drove some traffic to us. It's also been on a variety of other sites. And it comes down to, is this a story about patriotism or is this a story about procedure?
Well, we've just heard from Jim Beretta, who says this is Jim Beretta.
Hello,
he
Jim.
Is the commissioner of the Arlington Fire Department.
Is that the one that we're talking about?
Yes. Oh. Jim oversees the commission that made the decision.
Hi, Jim. Thanks
I've
for
met
listening.
Jim. I know Jim well.
This is Jim Beretta, commissioner of the Arlington Fire District. I'm getting and seeing an increasing number of emails and posts from veterans and others who are pointing out, after seeing the pictures of the AFD apparatus, that the flags were not mounted in accordance, we've already been there,
yeah.
with the United States flag code. The way they were mounted was also a violation of the flag etiquette from the Firemen's Association of the State of New York, FASNY, which says only one is authorized and is to be affixed to the right passenger side front bumper. The apparatus do have American flag decals, and that's from Jim.
There you go. So this could be part of the compromise. It's all going to be worked out.
Right. And I've met Jim on numerous occasions and his wife. I don't believe those points were raised initially, though.
But didn't you say in an editorial, let them fly the flag?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
well,
we
I mean, good here's American. Hoping it drags on for a few more days. Keep the traffic up there. Stu Shinsky is the executive editor of the Poughkeepsie
you
Journal.
You know, and there are plenty of flags flying around in this all over the country that are not adhering to the flag code. I mean, you see them; they're tattered, they're dirty,
yeah.
they're draped in puddles. I mean, it's something. Maybe if everybody really cares that much about a flag, maybe we should look at the code.
And Judy Patrick, well said. Judy is the editor of the Daily Gazette. Go ahead there.
Just very
Uncle
quickly, Jill Stein is on the ballot in 27 of 50 states, says Andy White. And
wow.
he gives us a link and said, P.S., enjoyed seeing you all live at the Linda.
I wasn't there.
Well, you were missed.
Yeah, I was over at OTB. All right, we'll take a quick break. It's 9:45, and then we'll do some other things and read some more mail and fill some time till 9:58.
Support comes from SPAC, celebrating its 50th anniversary season, welcoming the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center back to the Spa Little Theater. 6 performances through August 23rd, led by co-artistic directors David Finkel and Wuhan. SPAC.org for tickets. John Lee & Company, Estate Cleanout Services, Senior Living Consolidation, Auctions, Appraisals, Antiques, and Jewelry Purchase. 518-527-0531. Southwestern Vermont Medical Center, Bennington, through their affiliation with Dartmouth-Hitchcock, offering clinical trials, advanced technology, and genetic counseling for cancer treatment in Vermont, the Berkshires, and Capital Region. SVHealthcare.org. and the Mount Lenox, Massachusetts, presenting Touchstones, a literary series hosted by Kate Bollock and featuring author Katie Royfe this afternoon. EdithWharton.org.
We'll just open the mic anyway. They won't stop talking here at Studio A. It's 9:46. It's
a talk show.
We're talking about Tom DiNapoli, one of my favorite people in the whole world.
Yeah, and he'll be in for a recorded session.
New York State Controller.
Everybody on the people in government love this guy. They really love him because
not all, but
he went into a cesspool at the controller's office. He cleaned it up. He made it honest. He goes into each of these districts. He does audits, and the governor doesn't like the audits.
And what program will he be on?
He'll be on the Capital Connection. Don't ask when it's heard.
I won't.
Because he doesn't know.
WAMC.org.
He's the talent. He lets the little people handle the other things. Judy Patrick, have you been through... No, you let the underlings do.
Well, what do you mean, little people?
Fine. Well, I'm going to leave it alone.
Moving along, Ray.
So, in your capacity as editor of the Daily Gazette, have you had a chance to walk through the construction site at the new casino in Schenectady?
I have indeed.
I think they opened it up for journalists this week.
Yeah, they did. We've been there a couple of times, and we actually shot a really cool photograph from the river this week too. That showed that this thing is really coming along well, and people from the Gaming Commission say the Schenectady Casino will be the first upstate casino to open. I think it's targeted to open sometime early next year.
Bearing in
March.
Mind that Turning Stone's been open for 20 years.
The first of these new state licensed casinos, yes.
Do you really believe in gambling, Judy Patrick? I'm surprised at you.
Oh, do I believe in gambling?
Yeah.
I'm actually not a gambler.
Not yet.
You come here?
I do come here.
Gamble with your career, yeah.
But it's really, anyone who drives by this site, it's on off Erie Boulevard in Schenectady, right along the river.
Is that near the old GE? No.
GE's in the background. It's the old Elko locomotive site. They built locomotives there for many years. It was one of the biggest industries in town. It was a brownfield, and they really are developing it. There's a hotel that's almost that's rising.
And how many stories is that hotel to be?
I think it's 5 stories. It's changed the skyline there. I can see it from my office, and what we're seeing now are a lot of cranes.
Yeah,
4 or 5.
How about the infrastructure as far as getting in and out of the place?
Hey, the great thing is there's a new roundabout that's just opened last week on Erie Boulevard that I had to come through on my way here today, and it works so well. One of the things we did at the paper, we're trying to encourage the people in Schenectady to think innovatively or creatively about what to put in the middle of the roundabout. I was in
slot machine.
We think maybe a roulette wheel would be really cool.
Oh, that would
cool.
be great. No cool. accidents
well,
happen there.
This is not good. I don't approve of gambling because I see it as a sort of regressive taxation on a lot of poor people who will be using their milk and bread money to gamble.
But that's not you. You should be happy.
But you're trying to protect people from themselves.
Yeah.
Exactly. Isn't that what liberals do? We're smarter than you. We'll handle it. You don't have to do anything. Don't think for yourself. You're just a person. Don't do that.
Well, some of us who are trained in this area.
Here come the soft sciences. So what else is new in the Daily Gazette?
We have a story today. Saratoga Springs is a happening place this time of year. There's the Thoroughbred Racetrack underway, but over the last 20 years, Saratoga has evolved into this very popular residential city. So there's a lot of high-priced homes. But one of the things the city officials have long been concerned about is making housing for low-income people or moderate-income people. You don't want the place to be so exclusive that you don't have a good mix of people. So this week, they're considering a new proposal that would allow developers to increase the density of a project as long as they agree that they're going to have at least 20% of their units that will be of a more moderate price.
In the little town of Great Barrington, we have that exact same fight going on. It was supposed to be mixed. Then it turned out it was only going to be people who were under-resourced. So your story is right on target, Judy, because it affects virtually every town. You don't want to ghettoize an area and say only this will be the place that, quote, poor people go. You want to make it, but on the other hand, you want to make it fair.
Okay, so in the story by Stephen Williams in the Daily Gazette, you mentioned that 20% of the units in whatever new construction will be low to moderate. Who sets the threshold at what low moderate is?
Yeah, they're going to, my understanding is it's going to be tied to some, you know, price index, and that they will establish it. Because, of course, it's going to change what's low and moderate. Now is not going to be the same as what's low and moderate 5 years from now.
Sure.
And you also have to make sure that the portion that's cordoned off or the low and moderate is not cordoned off in a back corner with, you know.
Well, that's the least of it.
You have to incorporate it into the.
Have you talked at all to the people who would be building such things, and what are they, and maybe owning them and managing them, and what they think of this?
In general, they are especially supportive of the idea of being allowed to increase the density so they can get more units in there. I think that you'll still see people who won't care about that, and you'll see those big developments with multi-million dollar homes being built in Saratoga Springs. But in the past, we've written stories about this issue, and we talked to developers who agree that that Saratoga Springs needs a better mix. Because they have people they hire
workers.
You know, the people who run the restaurants. And
sure.
Everybody needs to find community needs, a healthy community needs all kinds of people.
Yeah, so, you know, I just want to say that in New York City, there were these mixed housing projects. My mom put one of them up on 96th Street between Columbus and Amsterdam Avenue, big project. And the idea was that you bought in at a very low price to a co-op, but then you could sell it back. You had to sell it back at the price you bought it for. Well, you know, these apartments are now worth a fortune. So those groups went to the legislature, got their lobbyists, and the legislature changed the law so you could sell it back and make a profit. That doesn't seem right, does it?
By the way, speaking of the legislature, Alan, you pointed this editorial out of the New York Post.
Yeah.
Court's ruling on corrupt New York Paul's pensions is long overdue. And this is by by the Post editorial board. Corrupt New York politicians who dream of retiring with fat taxpayer-provided pensions just took a big hit in court. Score one for justice and common sense. On Wednesday, a three-judge panel of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that pensions of convicted lawmakers can be seized even though the state constitution prevents those egg nests from being diminished or impaired.
This is an incredibly popular move by Preet Bharara, who says, okay, they're constitutionally required, but we're going to fine them the amount of money that, you know, they're going to get in the pensions. The public really doesn't like to pay pensions to people who have been convicted.
Yeah, this has always been an issue in the Journal, the Poughkeepsie Journal. We've editorialized that these pensions should be wiped away. Some people say, well, if he's been in office for 30 years of notable service and then he screws up, do you just eliminate all that service? But it's definitely... we've had a lot of letters saying, hey, you know, they're crooks. Don't give them a dime.
Well, what about the wives and the children and the husbands? Yeah. They raised that one, too.
Yeah.
You know, and we've editorialized about it as well. And the other important point here is this really could have a significant impact on their behavior. And they will think twice about doing something that may get them into trouble.
My question is, and I'll again quote from this piece in the New York Post, judges said disgraced former Assemblyman Eric Stevenson must surrender the $22,000 he paid into the system because the state constitution is preempted by federal law, which allows forfeiture of property derived from a crime irrespective of any provision of state law. Mm-hmm. Doesn't this become a federalism question? In other words, where does the federal government say, well, you know what, your state constitution, it really doesn't mean jack if we make a law?
You know, that's such a good point on your part, Ray. In fact, these decisions about what's appropriate reserved for the states as opposed to the federal government long ago have been sort of resolved by the Supreme Court and John Marshall, starting with John Marshall and the rest of it, which basically say, okay, you're supposed to have dual sovereignty, the state and the federal government. But in fact, the way that it really works is the federal government rules. Now, there'll be exceptions, of course, but that's what they say.
Yeah, we'll see if this case gets appealed or who will pursue
appealed.
There'll be a lawsuit.
It will be appealed. And then you go to the Supreme Court of the United States and they're all sitting there. And the first thing you ask when they rule against, say, oh, no, you can't take that away. You say, okay, how many of these people have pensions?
You know, there's talk of a constitutional convention. Maybe this is something that the constitutional convention can deal with because, it is such a popular issue among real people.
Yeah, they'll throw them that bone, but I am opposed to this constitutional convention.
Why?
As a big boondoggle of controlled by the same people who control the legislature. They don't work. It's a bad idea, and I'm just saying that. And even though some of my best friends, like Professor Jerry Benjamin and I, do disagree on this, you could probably make it better. You could also make it worse, and they will.
I don't know if any of you saw this. I know that Judy and Stu have big websites, and NPR's comments section is going off the air. National Public Radio announced yesterday that comments on NPR.org will be disabled beginning August 23rd. The feature has been part of the site since 2008. Scott Montgomery, NPR's managing editor for digital news, says the news organization made the decision because NPR's audience is more engaged on social media. He says about 19,400 commenters were active in July, with more than 5 million on Twitter.
So we all know that there's a whole bunch of trolls out there who get on websites, and they're a very small number. Mm-hmm. But they say it over and over again. They cross the line. They're obnoxious so often. And so after a while, you can do what we do. You can moderate them, right, Ray? You do that.
Yes.
You can moderate them and say, no, that's not going to be on. That's unacceptable. Or you can just say, enough of this already. It's all going to be on Facebook.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The modus of the commenting once upon a time was only on the website story, the bottom of the story.
Yeah.
Then social media exploded, and now the world lives on Facebook, and that's where all this commenting is happening. It's frankly, it's making the comment section of a website story obsolete.
So, Stu, you have turned the comments off?
We have not, but we have seen a dramatic, and I mean a dramatic shift. This fire department story with the flags, thousands of shares of this.
Yeah.
I mean, tens of thousands of shares of the story on Facebook. We had several dozen comments on our site, but nothing compared to what was on social media.
What about you, Judy?
You know, one of the things we have to be wary of as we do this is you shift more responsibility to Facebook. Like, we're using Facebook more and more to distribute our content. Is we're giving up so much of control to this big Facebook corporation. And so Facebook is going to be responsible. They're taking traffic away from us. Sure, we're getting engagement, but what are we, from a business perspective, getting out of it?
Too late. You missed the boat.
Unfortunately, that is probably where we will have to leave it. We still have our comments active. But, I think we should have that discussion at some point. It's a relative handful of people who actually comment.
And some of them, not all of them, but some of them are really trolls.
And some of them are really smart.
So maybe they could comment on this.
Maybe they could go to the Poughkeepsie Journal and comment instead.
That's funny.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, and we're out of time. Gosh, what a fast and furious hour. Stu Shinsky, the website once again, old boy?
That is PoughkeepsieJournal.com, sir. Thank you, Mr. Griff.
And Judy Patrick, your website?
DailyGazette.com.
Alan Chartok, your website? Forget it. All right, it's the Roundtable. Hour two is coming up.